Thank you, Brother Fred. For those who were with us last Thursday evening, you will have recognized that we didn't get too far in our 65 years. But we hope that you've gained from our observation of that period of time, and maybe it'll help you in your walk to the kingdom. And so we appreciate the fact that you are here. And just reviewing in preparation for tonight, reviewing again some of the experiences in my life, I stand before you, and that my observation was that it's only by the grace of God that I stand before you. Because looking back on those years in which I have lived, I can say at this time that we did many foolish things. We came into many dangers, and it was only the presence of God that has brought us, and His mercy has brought us unto this day. And that's one of the things, maybe like you, that I've observed in those years and recalled that the presence of God in my life. And I'm not very strong in faith, but I do have faith in the living God, and that He cares for those who strive to do His will. So after my talk of last week, I did appreciate some of the feedback. Now, most of it was fairly good. There were different comments and suggestions made, and people would recall some of their days in the truth to me. It was mentioned, as I said at that time, that there was a time in my life that I was a bit of a rebel, and I phrased it that way, a bit of a rebel, and not rebellious altogether. And I'm still a rebel, but I'm a rebel with a different cause, like the Apostle Paul. He said, and as I say, that I rebel against some of the things that are happening in my world around me, and I rebel about some of the things that I feel they're not right in the brotherhood. And I think this is the way we should all be, contending for the faith, and we should rebel against things which will lower the standards of the brotherhood and weaken the structure of the ecclesia which we belong to. So after a few comments that have been made, I felt a lot younger, because some of the brothers and sisters came up to me and said, well, you've only been 65 years in the truth, and Brother Mac, but I've been many more years than that. And one mentioned that one of their relatives had been in the truth for 75 years. And so I think that's great to hear that, and that God has allowed that individual to enjoy all those days in the work in the vineyard that God has assigned to him. One of the comments that was made to me was, you remember I discussed the fact of that we'd experienced the two great I was going to say the two great wars, but I'll just say one, the second war. I didn't have much to do with the first war, I'm happy to say. But one of the comments was made was that whilst we look upon the world, the Second World War, as something that was terrible, and many people suffered, and not very little came out of it, because nobody wins wars. One comment was made that some good did come out of the war. And as we discussed that, it was voiced that out of the experiences of that war, characters were made, strong characters were made, and the building up of the character of one who walked before God. And so what they were saying was these characters were developed, and the virtues were shown in such things as sharing, compassion, and long-suffering, and of a courageous spirit to be able to deal with the things of that hand at that time. So I think we did, as a young brother and as a young man in England, we did see these virtues being developed and holding the neighbourhood together when people did share, where they had long suffering, and in this particular way, whereas before in the land in the time of plenteous, there was seen to be this jealousy and discord, and not the harmony that should belong in the neighborhood. The other thing that came out of the war was the spread of the gospel. And for those who are studying the Acts of the Apostles, you'll remember that when Jesus departed from this world, and the angel said that he would return, they were told, they were given the command by Jesus Christ as apostles to go out and to preach the word. And he told them the area in which that they should have to preach, in Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and to all other parts of the world. And these apostles, these representatives of Christ, were a little reluctant to do this. And you remember the angel said, well, why are you standing here? Why stand ye gazing up? You've been given the instructions as to what you should do. You've got to go to Jerusalem until you receive from on high the Comforter. But they had this command to give. And they were in the comfortable pews. And they were reluctant to move from the ecclesia in Jerusalem. So what brought about the development of the spreading of the gospel was persecution and difficult times. And so we remember that when these things affected the ecclesia in Jerusalem, that Philip and others, they spread out into Judea, Samaria, and so instead of the one ecclesia in Jerusalem, you now have all these ecclesias scattered throughout the world. And we know that this fulfilled when the Apostle Paul went to Rome and he stood in defense of the things that he believed in. And the reason I mention this is because this was a repeat of history, because with the Second War, in 1937, there were 15 ecclesias in the Birmingham area. The main one, as most of you know, was in the town hall when they had from anywhere from 1,000 to 1,500 brothers and sisters who belonged to it. It was a tremendous experience to go there, and they were comfortable there. But with the persecution and the terrible things that happened during the Second War, they were forced, families were forced to go out into other areas, either for their work or for their safety, because the city of Birmingham was one of those that were, as we know, received a lot of damage from the German planes that flew over to destroy factories that were making armament and demoralize the people who were living there. So they went out. So 1937, 15 ecclesias. And so when you get into later on, after the war, and now, if you check into your ecclesial diary, there's over 37 ecclesias plus other different fellowships. And so we see that, again, out of this war, out of this experience of the war, came this spreading of the gospel, and it spread out into other parts. It was, no doubt, by divine arrangements that not that people should have these experiences, that they should be taking advantage of it, and the gospel should spread in this way. Mention was also made by someone about the homes in which we lived in. And during that time, from the 40s onwards, the homes in England were suitable for families, but they were not what you call luxurious homes. They didn't have all the benefits that we have today. And this is where I think the young people should realize the blessings that they have today, because when Sylvia and I got married, we were very fortunate to have a second-hand fridge. And we were quite pleased because we'd never had a fridge before. We never used a fridge. And because we know that we lived in homes in England that had no fridges, they had none of those the advantages. They had no washing machines, drying machines, and in our house we had the lighting was gas lights, the old mantle and the gas meter under the staircase, and we had one there, and we were supposed to, during when the bombs dropped, you were supposed to go under there and hide, and we never did because our meter was leaking, the meter leaked, and there was gas coming out, so we may not be hit by Germans, but we may have been gassed by our own meters in a house. So we never went under there. And to mechanize this meter to get light in the different rooms, you had to put a shilling in the meter. Every now and again, when the lights went low, Mother would dash off, light a candle, go in under the staircase, and put this coin in. And the gas was leaking. And as kids, we used to sit there and make the comment that our mother would very likely be the first woman into space because what she was doing. And these are the conditions that we lived under. And the only reason I mention it this time is because whilst we lived under these experiences, the home was a very important part in the families in England. The homes were a very important part in ecclesial life. And I emphasize this because I feel that there's going to come a time that we shall have to resort to the benefit of our homes in the preaching of the gospel. And we know that when we go to into the scriptures, whether you start into Genesis or finish up in the letters of the Apostle Paul, the homes played a very important part in the strengthening and holding together of the brotherhood or the ecclesias, and also in the preaching of the gospel. And they emphasized it because I think there's coming a time, and there should be now, with the lack of visitors to our lectures and talks, that we have to go into another direction and invite our friends into our homes. And it's there we can preach the gospel. It's always been there. It's always been in place. And we don't take advantage of our homes for this method of preaching the gospel. It's a comfortable way. It's a very powerful way. And we can see that it has had its results over the years. We go through the Old Testament, and you can see the benefit of people who lived in the homes. You go into the New Testament, and you'll see there constantly the people, that the power of the home presence. You remember that when Peter was thrown into prison, where were the brethren and sisters? They were at somebody's house. They were at somebody's house, and they had the fellowship. They need the encouragement of one another that our elder, Peter, is in prison. The fabric of us together is being weakened, and they needed the support of each other. And this is where it is with our homes. And they prayed when Peter came out and went. He knew where to go. He knew that he should go to sister so and so home, and the brothers and sisters would be there, and he would have the encouragement that his prayers were being answered, and the prayers of those within in the house. And so this is the way it should be. Remember constantly when Jesus, when he wanted to be reassured that he was doing the right thing, when he wanted strength, he went up into the mountains to be with his Father. But before that, he would go into the homes of Mary and Martha. That's where he wanted to be. That's where he had to be, to have the reassurance and the help of the men and women of the brotherhood to walk with him and reassure him that all was well. And so we remember that this is what my dear wife has helped me in many ways in the preaching of the gospel, and especially with the homes. We have been blessed of God that over the past 40 years, we have held a study group in our house once a week. And I'm not bragging here. I'm showing you how appreciative that God has used us in this direction. And I'm showing to you how powerful our preaching can be in our homes. We don't use it. It's not a bastion of faith that it should be. And I think this is where we can progress in this way. And we remember that the beginning, when we came to Canada, and after a period of time, I was having difficulties with my job. I didn't like the location. We're having troubles within the ecclesia and one thing and another. And it was suggested to us, and provision was made, that we should go to Australia. And we made plans to go to Australia, to have a change of pace, to see if things could maybe go on a different avenue of living in the truth. And then our dear brother Bob Stidell came to me. He'd come out to live with his brother, Vic, and he approached Sylvie and I, if he could come round and to have studies with us. And this is the early part of our stay in Canada, a couple of years. And I was very busy at that time in many, many things within the ecclesia and so on. And I said, well, I don't really have time. But I said, if you want to come, we'll make time. Why don't we take advantage of it and invite anybody else who's interested in learning the scriptures. And when he turned up, I think it was about 18 other people turned up. We had 20 people turn up. And so we considered the situation, and we thank Bob for this, that God used him in this direction, so that we remained here. And it turned out for the good. And this is where I say that if we walk with God, God will make sure that we have all provisions, and he will take. Seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all other things will be added unto you. That is fulfilled in any man or woman's life if they are set only to do the will of God and to seek his kingdom. And this is the way it was, that when we decided that we would do this for Bob and for others like the Drysdales and the McAdams and all those who had been through Sunday school and now had drifted away from it, they all came to our house. We taught them the scriptures or reviewed the scriptures or renewed the scriptures. And everything fell into place. I was offered a better job with more money. Sandra came along, or her presence was made known. So we decided to move from the house that we had. We had a better house. And everything just fell into place in this particular way. And so we thank God that it moved in that direction. And you have to do this, brother and sister. When you invite a brother or sister into your in your home, you're entertaining angels unawares. You don't know what that brother or sister is going through. They're difficult, and you invite them in there. And as Jesus said, if you offer them a cup of cold water in my name, you'll be surprised what things can happen. You can bring someone back to the truth. You can make them strong to continue in this way. So never underestimate the power of the residence in which is yours. You have the advantages today of beautiful homes, the comforts of everything, and you can do this missionary work within your own area. Okay, so that's some of the comments that were made in the feedback that I got, and I hope that I maybe have answered a few of them in that way. So when I was baptized in Rugby, and I, in my baptism, I volunteered to be a soldier of Christ. And I came out of the waters of baptism convinced that I would remain faithful to Christ 100%. I came out of the water baptism convinced that I was going to evangelize the whole world. It's the same on one occasion when Brother Clover and I went down into the States in Salem, which was a pleasant place. We came back convinced that we were going to go back and we were going to evangelize the whole area. Well, it was not to be. It was not to be because we sought that avenue and it didn't work out. So we are still here, and thanks to God, he's using us in a different direction. So anyhow, when baptized, it was a time that when all my friends were being called up for military duty, and I said that I would be, try to be a soldier of Christ. But I quickly learned how ill-equipped I was. I realized in so many ways that I wasn't fully trained. I wasn't fully trained in the way of a defense. For the things that I stood in, for lack of education, for lack of study, I realized that I was not equipped in far as having a sufficient faith to be able to stand up to all opposition. It was that time that I learnt the saying which is said, dare to be a Daniel, dare to stand alone. Because I think Gordon asked a question regarding the time that I had to stand before the tribunal. And we got the calling up papers, and we had to go to a registration office, and there were many of my friends there. And I went up to the counter, and I said to the man behind the counter in a very small voice, I want to be a conscientious objector. And he said, all the conscientious objectors down the other side, the end of the hall. In a sergeant major's voice, so I quickly reduced myself to about 3 feet and crept over there. explain to the person what I would like to do to be a conscience objector. And he took everything into account and wrote all the details down. It was that time that 1,000 eyes seemed to be looking at me. And it was on a later date, as we still remained in the city, that many of my friends was opposed to me. Many of my friends, and it's not an easy thing that when you've been mixing with young men of your own age, suddenly to find them seeing you on the street, crossing the road, and refusing to speak to you, and calling names like you are a coward, you won't fight for your country, and so on. Anyhow, the time came that I received the date in which I had to go before the tribunal, and the recording brother said that he would go with me. He said, I will take you to the Birmingham, and I will represent you. And so I was thankful for that. And but I realized how little that I was prepared for the question that would be thrown at me when I stood before the judge. And so anyhow, when it came my time called to stand before the judge, and this is the way it is. I think God has looked on me in the past and now as one very weak in faith and that way. And he compensates that for me by arranging things around me that makes it easier for me to remain faithful. And when I stood before the judge, the recording brother was on my left. And before I was trying to remember the quotations and everything, before I could even open my mouth, I recognized that the judge and this recording brother, they were very, very close friends. So while I was waiting for this bigger opportunity to show the verses that I remembered, these two men went into a very long conversation. And they spoke to each other and discussed the welfare of each other and so on. And in this particular way, and I was shaken at the knees a little bit, waiting for the judge to just see if he could trap me into forcing me to go into areas in which I didn't want to. And then the judge said to this brother, Brother Collishaw, he said, do you vouch for this young man, Mr. Collishaw? And Mr. Collishaw said, he is a very fine lad. He's a good lad. He goes to church every Sunday. And I think he's worthy of a little bit of your compassion at this time. And I thought afterwards, I think this may have been the only time this brother told the half-truth or lied when he gave me that recommendation before the judge. But I thank him for it. So the judge asked me what I did for a living. I told him that I was a mechanic, motor mechanic, or training to be one. And he said, well, you no doubt repair farm equipment and farmers' cars. I said, yes, by all means. So he said, you can stay in that position, that job, for the rest of the war. And I thank God for it. Now, I want to interject here a warning, I think, that it was mentioned during the feedback regarding the incident that I mentioned of the young man before me. Remember I mentioned the young man before me was approached by the judge, and the judge said, okay, what do you do for a living? He says, I'm a butcher. Oh, you kill little animals and all that kind of stuff. He said, but if a German came into your house and attacked your mother, would you defend yourself? Would you take up a gun? And he said, oh, no, he said, I couldn't do that. So anyhow, the judge sent him down the coal mines and for the rest. The reason I mention this, because if the time comes that young brethren and maybe sisters have to go through this experience, they've got to prepare themselves now before that occasion, because the judges are out to trap you in any small way. And the reason I mention this, because I've noticed of late that many of our brethren are hunters, become hunters. I don't know whether we have any here, but some of our brethren seem to delight in the use of guns and go hunting for animals. And there may have been a time when that was necessary, out of necessity that they had to do this for food and survival of their family. But we don't have to do that now. But there seems to be this thing with some of our young brethren, and I'm not afraid to confront them on this, that they find sport in this. And it may be all right, well, it's not right as far as I'm concerned, because there may come a time that when they have to make a defense and they can be brought before those the authorities, and you won't take up arms, but you delight and find pleasure in killing animals, which you don't really need, and you make sport of it. So I think that's the thing that should be remembered at this time for those who involve themselves in this time of pleasure. And so it is in this particular way. So I was grateful to the brother and the prayers of my ecclesia and to the judge who, as I mentioned last week, the Christadelphians had become well respected by those of the authorities of the tribunal. They saw that they were sincere, because I had friends who suddenly decided to become a conscience objector a month before they were called up. And they, when they got before the judge, they had the wrath of him against him and against that individual. And no doubt they should. So anyhow, in my development of my spiritual life, I found it very easy in some ways. At that particular time of our history, we didn't have the distractions that we have today. At that time, we didn't have television. At that time, we had the only thing in our house was a radio, which was two stations, Luxembourg, I think it was in BBC, which was operated and kept alive by a wet battery that had to be charged every week. We didn't have the ring of cell phones and all those things. And within the ecclesia itself, there seemed to be a more reverent atmosphere. We didn't have the cell phones. We didn't have people parading around with bottles of water. We didn't have people parading off into the toilets, going to the toilet. And when I see it today, I think, you know, maybe we're a different breed in those days, but when we came to a meeting, we didn't have to see parades of people. There are occasions, I must admit, because of health and that kind of stuff. It's necessary, but not the way we see it in the ecclesia today. We have this parading off into this different way. So the atmosphere seemed to be better, and the standards of dress seemed to be better. I can well remember that on one Sunday morning, one of the young brethren, it was the summertime, he came in and came into the ecclesia and sat in the morning service in clothes which were not really suitable for one who is before God. And I was talking to this, and this recording brother came up and told him. He said, "This isn't the way to come before your God." And he explained to him, and the young brother appreciated the fact, and he tried to make a better attention to the way that he dressed before his God. There is standards. The world demands standards when we go before those of authority. The world demands a standard, so God demands standard. And we worship the way we dress. That's the way it is. And I feel this way. Now, you may not all agree with me, but this is the one of the things that I can see. And you may say, well, why is it? Is it that important? It's important because the way I see it is, as when we were belonged to the ecclesia, some of us young brothers and sisters wanted changes within the youth groups and all that kind of stuff, and we went before the arranging brother and said, look, we'd like to do this and that in the youth group. And we'd like to change this. And they discussed it. They were patient. And they said, no, I don't think you should do it. And we said, well, what's wrong with it? And they said, well, this is the thin end of the wedge. We're opening up the floodgates. So sure, we'll let you do it. It doesn't seem to be that harmful. But what's the next thing you're going to be? What's the next thing you're going to ask us to do? So they said, we'll shut the gate now. And at the time we thought, well, you miserable old brethren, there's nothing wrong with what we want to do. But now as we look back, and when we look back, we appreciated their advice in that particular way. And so, as I say today, I think we have to be careful within the ecclesia. And some people say it doesn't matter. The scripture says it matters, because, as we say, with the under the law, there was importance the way they dress. When the brothers and sisters came together, I'm sure in the days of Paul, Peter, and all those others, they were careful the way they came into the brotherhood and their appearance. The world demands it, and that's the exhortation. The world demands it, and if they demand it, God demands it, and we should conform in that way. Now, with trying to live the truth and trying to be strong in the truth at that particular time, it was very difficult for men like me, Brother Allen, and all those who belonged to this ecclesia. And I say this because there were no provisions for assistance to young brothers and sisters growing spiritually. And that's why the young people today have wonderful opportunities of growing strong in the truth. We at that time didn't have any study weekends. We didn't have any Bible schools. We didn't have any youth gatherings. We had no campaigns. We had no work in the ecclesia that a brother like mine could go off to Jamaica or into other places there and grow quickly in the truth. There was nothing for that, those kind of things. And so it was very difficult. It was very difficult because if you were in an ecclesia as a young brother, there were none of the outlets or exercises that you could become involved in. And so, consequently, if you were not careful, you were sitting on the back row and just waiting there and not growing too strong. So we know that the European War ended in 1944, and then it was followed by the Japanese War to end with the dreadful atom bomb later on. And it was a time when there was to be a new beginning, a rebuilding within the city, and a rebuilding within the ecclesia amongst the young people. So there was a stirring after the war, 46 onwards. There was a stirring within the ecclesia because the elders recognized the weaknesses and the flaws. As far as we mentioned last week, Churchill said, the future belongs to the youth. And that's what the brethren of the brotherhood recognized, that Brother A.D. Norris and Whitaker and Sargent and Carter, they're not going to be around here for much longer. Who's going to fill their shoes? And so they had to address this problem and this difficulty at this time. And so a revival came into effect, and the brotherhood was committed to it to make arrange things better on the home front. And so there was this zeal and this movement. And as with the apostles, when Jesus ascended up into heaven, for many years afterwards, they believed that Jesus was coming. They would believe that Jesus was in a very short time to return. It was only till later on the Apostle Paul, by visions from heaven, recognized that a period of time, so much had to happen before it, and that he addressed them that they should remain steadfast in their ways because they had a long journey ahead of them. And so with this, with the war and the return of the Jews to their land, the brotherhood was really rising up for action. And we had these campaigns coming into effect, the revival of preaching the gospel. There was this greater enthusiasm, mass movement that they could see should happen in the way of the preachers going out and preaching the gospel. And so we had these campaigns and centered around Israel, the return, because they thought, well, if now the war's finished, the next movement is going to be of the Jews going back to the land. And so we had many campaigns. As a young brother, I got involved in, we had many campaigns, and most of the leaflets were given out with the title, Watch Palestine. So we know how far we're going back now. Instead of the use of the title Israel, it was called Palestine, Watch Palestine. And we distributed these around. Conditions were still not very good within the within the world, in the way of food was still being rationed right up till around 1950, and it continued in that way. But we were always again I mentioned last week that there was this generation gap, and this effort now by the brethren and the campaign got the young people with them, and so older brethren and sisters, the young ones, got together, and we would do this. And the end of the campaigning around the city, we would always find a fish and chip shop and enjoy fish and chips in newspaper saturated in vinegar. So this was one of the lighter sides of the work of the truth. It got so much that in England around 1950, it was so, the brethren felt for sure that Christ was coming, that I listened to lectures in the middle of England when brethren stood up and preached on the title, Jesus Christ Will Return in 1950. They were given dates like this when Jesus will return. And we know that this was fatal to do this kind, take this kind of action. But it was good in as much as the brethren were now being stirred up and they expected Christ to return any moment, and this which should be this way. The endeavor now was to organize youth groups. And so you remember the youth group was organized, known as the youth circle in this way. So this was all good. And as we mentioned, these brethren who were overseers of us, they saw to it that if we had this enthusiasm and this zeal, then it must be directed in the right way. Go with me to Jeremiah chapter 6. I think this is a good line that they followed, and one that we should. I think if we ever think about changes, and maybe they're not altogether supported by the scriptures, I think we should go to this. I often think this is some of the elders addressed us with this verse from Jeremiah chapter 6 and at verse 16. And he says, this is Jeremiah preaching to the people of his day who wanted changes. They wanted to go in another direction. And God said, no, you should go in this direction. And God was saying, this is for your benefit in more ways than one. And this is what Jeremiah said. Thus saith the Lord, stand ye in the ways and see and ask for the old paths where is the good way and walk therein. And ye shall find rest for your souls or your lives. But they said, we will not walk therein. And this was the conversation that was going on, let's say, during that time between 46 and 50, that wanted changes. But the elders would say, no, stay with the old ways, and you will prosper in that way, and you will be at peace with your God. And so this was the guidelines that they seemed to use. So we were advised to stay that way, not cluttering ourselves with all fancy suggestions and those kind of things. And so youth weekends were arranged, campaigns in different parts of England were put into motion, and everything went on in this direction. And we found great help and strength in this way. There was a revival of fraternal gatherings. And we take these things for granted. You know, we've been down to Palm Springs, the Bible school there. Wonderful experience. And we can go to attend other fraternals in Vancouver. We have our own. We had one recently with our brother Bill Link. And it was fantastic. But we have a tendency to accept these as routine or a part of our ecclesial life. But we should be more thankful and grateful, and take advantage of these moments like this, because it's so good for us in this particular way. So fraternal gathering became a big thing in England. And it was good in many ways, because a lot of families had for many years, close to 8 or 10 years, been very short on food and a little bit of the fancy part of eating, because they've been through the war, the ration and everything else. there was this restriction. So when we had these fraternal gatherings, part of it was of having a big English tea. So before we had all the talks, we'd have these tables, and the sisters were there, and they made these beautiful meals. And of course, one of the favorite things was for us young brethren was to pick out the table with the biggest English trifle. It's about 2 inches thick of cream on top of it, and so on. And so we had this little extra treat, but I say it was a drawing together and of the fellowship that we gained in this particular way. So here we were at this stage of our life and becoming immersed in the truth, but we still wanted action. You see, because we grew up in an ecclesia where there was a surplus of excellent brethren who were teachers and preachers. And so when they wanted work to do, they had this cluster of competent brethren. So young brethren never got called on to do to get involved in anything. It was almost as if we were still under the law of Moses, and it was being carried out that at the age of 30, you may be called to the duty of the house of God. You may. And that's the way it was. So here we were young brethren who had this desire, as Paul said to Timothy, the fire is burning. The fire was burning within your beings, but now there's nothing but embers. You know, stir them up. Get them burning again. Light them up so you can give heat off and comfort to other people. And so this was my feeling, and it was very difficult because I wanted to get involved. And it reminded me of a story that I read once of a young man who was very military minded, and he joined the American Army. And he went through all the training. He loved to parade in his uniform. But he wanted action. He wanted to be on the front line. So he went to the colonel and he says to the colonel, I want to be involved in action. I want to be on the front line. And the colonel looked at him and he says, your duty at this time is to be prepared so that when we need you and we call you, you are ready. And that was the advice given to it. So this was, I felt, in a way that maybe God was dealing with me this way. Well, get yourself trained, get yourself equipped, and then we may use you if we have an area in which we can put you in. And so it developed this way. And we're going to close in a couple of minutes to open the class for questions as to of anything we've said, or if you want further knowledge of some of the experience that I mentioned. But I didn't realize at that time that this is what was happening, that I was in the state of preparation, and the time would come when God would send me into the front line. And when we were growing up as a young boy, as most of you know, my father was out in Canada in 1913. And the reason he came out in 1930, not because he wanted to, not because he was adventurous, not because he wanted to get away from home, it was because of the tragedy. His father died in a road accident. His Clive's grandmother was living out in Saskatchewan. And my father's mother said, we have too many boys at home. Here's £5 I've sewn into your waistcoat. Go with your brother, Don, to Canada, to your sister, and you can make a living out there. So he would tell us these stories. As a young kid, we would sit around, of course, no TV, and he was our entertainment. He would tell us the stories of in Canada. And I said, that one day, Father, I will go there. I will go there, not with the idea of going out to help with any ecclesia and that, but just to see the things that he talked about, go to the place where he went and where he lived. And he lived in an old cabin, an old wood cabin, log cabin. That's still there today, still in the same condition. Everything is there. And he lived there with a brother, Gordon, John Gordon, who was a pioneer, had gone out in 1897, I think it was. And the only reading material they had, the only reading material they had was a Bible, Alpers Israel, and Eaton's catalogue. And that's the way they got their goods and everything, by sending away to Eaton's. And he told us that after he finished work at night by oil lamp, they would read the Bible, the daily reading. Then they would read Alpers Israel, and they would read it right through. Then they would read it through again and mark all the quotations in their Bible. And then they would go back the third time, and they would memorize all the main verses associated with the promise made to Abraham, and so on in that way. This was their education. And the reason I mention this is because I think today we don't do enough reading of the pioneer works and of the reading of the writings of our brethren. And we have some wonderful books out there. Wonderful books by Dennis Gillett, A.D. Norris, and all those different ones, Brother Bilton. And they're wonderful books, and they're easy to read, but there's so much knowledge that we can glean from them, and we should do more of this. And so it was that I'll just finish a little section off, and then we'll open it for questions. And so it was that we dwelt upon this idea of going to Canada, but we always put it at the back of the mind because we were very comfortable in England. I got myself a good job. I was making good money. I had a good home. I had no reason for leaving it other than if God would take me somewhere so that I could become active in the truth. And so it was that at that particular time, with all the thousands of men, trained men, and who had died on the battlefield, that there was a shortage of men, not alone in England, but also in Australia. And Australia and New Zealand were putting out this offer to young men in other countries that for £20 or for about $40, $45, that you could have this airfare to their country, or boat trip to their country, on one condition: you remain there for 2 years. So all my friends were going to Australia, and some came to Canada, to Toronto, and into the States, into Detroit, and there. So they were constantly going there. One particular day, I was walking through the, and I say this because, as most of you know, I have a deep understanding and belief that angels are active in the lives of those who are faithful to God. And I was walking down, on a Wednesday afternoon at 2 o'clock, down the main street of the city that I lived in, and I passed by. I had no intention, no thought to do it. I was walking past Cook's Travel Agency, and the next minute I knew I was standing in the store before a counter saying to the gentleman behind me, "I want to go to Canada." I hadn't got a clue about Canada. I hadn't got a clue why I was doing this. But suddenly I came around and I said, "Did I do that?" Because I had no intention to go. I just out for a walk. There's a route, the walk we used to take past the rugby school and into the swimming pool area. And I would want. But as I say, I suddenly found myself standing before this counter and saying to the gentleman, "I want to go to Canada." And I felt like David of old, because David had that experience when he said, when he wrote in, it's written in the 2 Samuel 7, he says, "God took me from the sheep colt and from following the shepherd and used me for another purpose. The Lord had assigned to him his portion and his goodly cup." So on that particular time, here I was. And when I went home, I never mentioned it to my parents, and they didn't know until all this information came through the mail. And my mother's reaction was, "Well, what's wrong with home? Have you been in trouble with the law? Why are you leaving home? And why are you going to Canada?" That was her reaction. My father's reaction was, "It'll do you good, boy. It'll get you away from your mother's apron strings. They'll make a man of you." So I said, "Thanks a lot, Father, for those comforting words." But anyhow, so that's the way it was. And it was the last night that I was leaving England, and we had a family get-together. And I turned to my father just before I went to bed, and I said, Father, exactly where am I going to? And he says, Son, you are going as far west as you can go. And I thought, oh, it was too late then, so I went to bed and slept on it, ready to depart. Anyhow, are there any questions? I see the time is slipping by. Are there any questions as to what we said so far?
So did you go back?
Pardon?
Did you go back?
Go back where?
Did you stay 2 years, or did you stay 3 years, or 4 years? What did you do?
No, I've been stayed here for
forever.
55 years. No, my friends, they had the agreement with these countries that they would have this cheap trip arranged for them. On condition that they stay for 2 years. I had a friend who went to Australia. Some were there and some had died there. I had some that went to Detroit. But I had no intentions of going to there. And the only reason I came in this direction, as I say, because of the influence of my father, and because I believe that it's the best thing that happened to me. If I'd stayed in England, I hate to think whether I would still be in the truth or whether I would still be alive. And for more reasons than one. So, like David said, there was a time when God took him out of his location and reestablished him in another one for God to use him in that way. So, is there any other questions?
When you started the classes in your home, how did you commence them? What was the procedure?
How do we commence them, did you say? Yeah. Oh, I see. I think Don, our friend from Calgary, has asked a question. When we started up this study session or group discussion in our home, how did we commence it? How did we arrange it and format? Yeah, that's a good question, actually. From that time, as I said, we achieved this. Like, I must emphasize the fact it was only by my dear wife's help, because she made cookies for them. Every time they came, there was always refreshments. She made sure the children were bathed and that, all in bed. So everything was set up, my meals. I was always there at 5:30. And I was very demanding of my wife, I must say. And she... only by her patience, we're still with us, with one another today. But anyhow, so I thank her for it. We've developed our method of teaching or having these groups over the years. But I think Bob can verify it, that maybe I was a bit of an amateur in this type of work. But when we had these people around, the 20 of us sitting in our front room, I took the first principles and used the declaration as a basis. But what I tried to do with this, and I think is important, is to, if you have we have a group now, as most of you know, 10 of us on Monday afternoon, we sit around, and it's a different approach because some of these people are seasoned now in the study of the Word. But we've have found out that the most powerful form of preaching is not necessary in the word, but in the sincerity and the approach to it and the feeling that they get in that atmosphere. And I mention this because most of you remember, just got a comment, most of you remember Brother Drysdale, and brother and sister Drysdale. Well, he had been brought up in the Christadelphian ecclesia in Victoria, and there's been an ecclesia here since... Well, Robert Roberts came through here for a long time. And Brother Drysdale came, and he came for, I think he came for three sessions of it. Because he enjoyed the discussion, but he enjoyed the atmosphere. And the reason I mention this is because he was now in a different atmosphere to an atmosphere that he had grown up with in the ecclesia that was in Victoria. Now, I'm being very careful here, but I want to explain that the ecclesia in Victoria was not a very pleasant, comfortable, and entertaining ecclesia. They had lots of difficulties. And the reason I mention it is because I've talked with some young brethren today, and they've complained about little things happening within our ecclesia. And I said, don't you even think about complaining of any little setback in our ecclesia. You should have belonged to the ecclesia that I belong to and came to, and you would then see how blessed you are today. And the reason I mention it is because this brother Drysdale, who was not a brother at that time, but he wanted to come along with Bob's group and to learn the truth. And he was not a man who felt comfortable in company. And there's a lot of us. A lot of us feel uncomfortable in a crowd or a new crowd. It's a hard thing to adjust to. And he came, and after a while, the highlight of his week. Not because I was speaking or teaching. That was the last thing on the list. It was because of the fellowship, and he saw now the word having a different effect upon men and women. And his wife came. His wife would come. She had a dog, and she would take a dog to a dog school in Cabra Bay, close to us. And we used to say to her, well, why don't you come to our group? Oh, no, I can't do that. And their excuse was, you've got to take the dog. But when she came, after a while, she would take her group, and then he would pick her up and bring her back because he wanted her to meet all these wonderful brethren and sisters he referred to them. And she would stand at the bottom of our stairs, and you couldn't budge her. She saw these people up there, and she said, no, I'm not going up in that crowd. And she wouldn't come up. And then after a while, I think it was Sylvia, went down and talked with her and said, well, just come up for a cup of tea. And she came up for a cup of tea, and that was it. After that, every week, that was a highlight of her week. And after a while, she got baptized. I don't think she'd ever been to Sunday school or any public lectures or anything like that, but she was baptized in that way. So this is... these are the things, and we approached the study at that time, as I say, on first principles. And we've developed it over the years into a different approach, using a setting of the Bible to preach first principles. And that's the most effective way. Because what you're doing, like the group we have, what you're doing is you're introducing the Bible to these people, you're making them comfortable with the Bible, you're making them understand the Bible, and you're making them know what the Bible is and how the setting is, all the way from Genesis to... We have some that don't even know what's in Genesis 1. And they don't understand that. And they don't even know who Abraham was. And we have some who came believing 100% in the Trinity and in heaven going. The group that we have now is that way. We don't have to talk about the question of the Trinity being wrong, or heaven going, or the devil being a supernatural being. They accept it. They've learned it through our studies. The only barrier that they have is their social thing. They don't want to leave their friends in the church. And we say, yeah, you don't have to put your friends aside, but you have to fellowship with those of the way and of the truth, and those, because the truth will make you free. That's what we hammer at all times. And so I think, as I say, a lot more could be done with this, and I think we may have to answer for it one day, because this is the location in which God has given us our homes, and we should. Invite a friend. Invite a neighbor. We have the location you know we live in. The Christadelphians have quite an influence, not because of me, but the influence have quite an influence in that complex that we're in, because the presence of brethren and sisters there who live what they preach. And we have one couple, when they who used to be who was very prominent in the Christchurch Cathedral, and he left there because he's dissatisfied with what's going on in the church. And we meet these people, and this is where they are. We have corresponding with people who we met on that European tour, and they're looking for a church, or they're looking for a place because they're disappointed with the church, because the church isn't giving them the answers. The church isn't living up to the things. And we now are corresponding with a doctor down the States that we met. And him and his wife, they believe in the act of baptism. But they don't believe in what is going on in their church. They know the Bible, they read it, and we're communicating with them. And this is another thing. Oh, I better be careful. I better stop right there. But so I encourage you, brethren. And we have, as my wife and I, have had the pleasure of going into the homes of you, many of you here, and we have found strength and help and comfort and pleasure of being in your company. And it's these things. Think how hard it must have been for Jesus if he couldn't go into a home for an evening meal. Think how difficult it would have been for Paul if he hadn't had those sisters who helped him. The cross would have been much heavier for them to carry than it was, because Jesus knew that when he carried his cross, when Paul carried his cross, he knew that there was somebody behind him giving them a lift and carrying it, and that's the only way they were able to finish the course. Now, thank you very much. But I suppose that's my two sessions. As you say, I haven't got very far in my life. In giving you some of the, but maybe I'll wait for the reaction and see what it is, and if it's favorable, we may finish it off in the next program. If it doesn't, and you've heard the talks, think only this of Brother Matt, that he tried to be a disciple of Christ.